Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 1996. Piper Striley is abducted from her own home, and the only two witnesses are her two young children, Nathan and Shayna.
The little girl told him there was a mean man.
He yelled at her to get on the floor.
She yells to her children, run and hide, run and hide.
Carried off her mother, and they left in a black car.
2 years earlier in 1994, another woman, Larissa Jemanski, vanishes from a parking lot never to be seen again. Could these two cases be connected?
He was not going to be denied this woman.
And if they don't find her, she could die.
Are they on the hunt for a serial killer in Sioux Falls, South Dakota? On the banks of the Big Sioux River, Sioux Falls, South Dakota boasted a population of 100,000 in the mid-90s.
We get a little bit of everything. We get what everybody else gets, we just don't get as much of it. For a lot of years, particularly 1995 through 2003, 2010, South Dakota averaged about one homicide, one murder, one intentional homicide a month statewide. So not a lot. You get some, you just don't get very many. We just have a relatively low crime rate compared to other jurisdictions.
Sioux Falls is known as the healthiest city in America. A massive meatpacking facility is one of the largest employers in town and has been since the city was founded.
Sioux Falls is the largest city in the state of South Dakota. And it was an excellent place to grow up. In fact, the city had twice been ranked by national magazines as being the number one city in the United States of its size to live based on education, housing, low crime rate.
...28-year-old Piper Striley and her husband Vance moved to South Dakota to pursue their dream of opening a full-time church. For now, they build a place of worship in the backyard of their rural home.
They were trying to start a church on their property, on their acreage. And they had pews set up outside. They had an archery range.
They had intended to build a church there, but all they really had at that location was a little swimming hole that they'd made out of a stock dam. They had an open-air picnic shelter.
They were just in the process of buying a church that was being sold and having it moved to their property so they could start their own congregation.
Originally from Rio Medina, Texas, Piper meets Vance in Bible College in Oregon.
So they had the same views in life. They had two young children, Shayna and then her little brother Nathan.
To pay the bills while they build up their ministry, Vance works as a plumber, while Piper works as a home care worker in Sioux Falls.
Vance worked every day, 6:30 to about 5. Vance left for work that Monday morning and said, you know, I'll call you over the lunch hour to find out where the kids are going to be, because sometimes Piper used a local babysitter and sometimes she used Grandma, Vance's mom, who lived in town. In Sioux Falls. And so he leaves.
a.m. Piper calls the babysitter to say she's on her way with the kids.
Piper called the babysitter and said, I'll be over at the usual time, which would have been about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But that's the last anybody ever heard from Piper.
By noon that day, Vance has received two phone calls, one from the daycare and another from Patty Sinclair, Piper's co-worker, saying that Piper hasn't turned up for work. When Vance calls Piper to check on her, the answering machine picks up instead. Around 3 o'clock, Patty Sinclair calls the Striley home again, and someone unexpected answers the phone. Patty hears the distraught voice of Piper's daughter, Shayna.
Young Shayna answers the phone. Shayna is almost 4 years old. The co-worker asks, is your mommy home? Shayna says, no. Is your daddy home? No. Is there a babysitter? Shayna says, no. They're all killed. And then Shayna hangs up the phone.
Of course, the worker's very concerned. She calls back and they have the 911 operator on the phone as well, and Shayna answers again.
This time she was hysterical. She was crying, her mother was gone, she wasn't coming back, didn't know where her father was.
She asked her, well, where did mommy go? When did she leave? And Shayna says, a mean man in a black car carried mommy away. I don't want mommy to die. I don't want daddy to die. I don't want them ever to die.
And the 911 operator is giving her some information to ask Shayna to try to get more out of her, but she's a little three-year-old girl, almost four.
And then Shayna hangs up the phone again.
So the 911 operator called the McCook County Sheriff. And so all the McCook County Sheriff knew at that point was that there was these two little kids who were home alone without any adult supervision.
Given the seriousness of the report that's been made at this point, the sheriff's priority is really on the well-being of the children.
Police go to the Striley residence to check on the welfare of Shayna and her younger brother, Nathan.
He visited with the little girl a little bit, but he wasn't able to get much out of her. So this is about 5 o'clock in the afternoon by now, and the phone rings, and the sheriff answers the phone. And it's Vance, it's Dad, calling because he can't find his kids. That's an interesting conversation because, of course, Dad doesn't expect the sheriff to answer the phone at his house. Of course, the sheriff isn't sure that Vance isn't part of the problem.
The minute Vance got home, obviously, the authorities are always going to look at a close relative. They asked Vance not to talk to the children, to stay outside so they could talk to the children more. As the investigators continued to talk to little Shayna, she kept saying that a mean man took Nathan's tent, his play tent that he just got for his birthday, and the mean man carried mommy away and left in a black car. With that, the investigators talking decided that Vance probably didn't have any part of this. So they bring Vance in, and immediately Shayna opens up and starts saying more and more about what happened.
Shayna tells police that a mean man driving a black vehicle with black wheels comes into the trailer and grabs their mother. The man stole Nathan's blue tent from his bedroom. Shayna says there's a lot of yelling and that the man shoots a gun.
She yells to her children, run and hide, and they do.
So one of the first things they do is they set up a roadblock out in front of the Strily residence to stop anybody going by to see if any local residents nearby had seen anything. Well, they happened to stop the county road grader, the driver that's responsible for keeping the gravel roads smooth in the rural areas. And the road grader driver tells him, yes, I was coming by here earlier and I did see something strange.
He was coming one direction on the road, a vehicle was coming the other direction, and it was a very distinct vehicle. There was a CB antenna and some other distinctive features about it. But when that vehicle got about 100 yards away, it did a U-turn, went into the ditch, and went the other way. So he thought, well, that's odd, and he's grading the road. A couple hours later, he comes back, and that same vehicle is coming from a different direction, now from an east-west direction. And he noticed where it went, and then later on, when he ate his lunch, he saw that that vehicle was parked by the Strily house.
And so now the authorities are saying, okay, we have a vehicle that made a suspicious U-turn. So they were starting to focus on this vehicle.
As police secure the property, Vance Strily takes his kids to their grandparents for the night, fearful of what's happened to Piper. While in bed, Vance suddenly remembers that a man came by the house the previous Friday.
And he had a distinctive black car. And he also remembers the man's name.
Is it possible that Vance has met his wife's abductor? Sioux Falls, South Dakota, July 1996. Vance and Piper Strily run Bible camps for the kids in the area. Their dream is to someday offer a church here. But a stranger turns their dream into a hellish nightmare. Piper Strily's young daughter, Shayna, says a mean man in a black truck carried her mother away. Later that night, Vance Strily comes to a gruesome realization. He may have met the man who had taken her.
Vance remembers something. He remembers that the previous Friday, there had been a man who showed up at the house about 7:30 in the morning.
And Vance notices in the driveway a black Bronco, an SUV, pure black, flat black. It looked strange. Even the rims were painted black. The bumpers were painted black. He thought it was very strange.
He said, well, I have four kids, so I want to know about the camp. And Vance says, well, why don't you give me your name and your phone number, and I'll call you about it. And then next year when we have the camp, you can come.
So Piper comes out with a piece of paper, gives it to the guy, and he writes down his name and address.
And he gives that to Vance, and Vance knows where he puts it. He puts it in a drawer where he keeps that kind of thing.
Well, they take the place apart and they cannot find the note. But they do get this information out of Vance that the guy said his name was Robert Anderson. Anderson told him the reason he was familiar with the place was because his father, Anderson's father, lived on Doc Schaefer's place, which was on the same road about 2 or 3 miles north of where the Strilys lived.
Investigators now have a name to run a check on, as well as a description of a vehicle, a black Ford Bronco, that they can cross-check. They also know the name of an Anderson, Leland Anderson, who happens to live close by.
So they run a record check for motor vehicles. This is now midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And they get 275 vehicles registered to Robert Anderson in South Dakota.
A investigators need to dig deep into the playbook to locate their Robert Anderson.
One of the authorities said up near Lake Vermilion, there's a man by the name of Leland Anderson that lives up there. So they checked the records. They got a phone number for Leland Anderson. One of the investigators calls that number. A woman groggily answers the phone, and the investigator just makes up a story. He says, I'm sorry to call at this time of the morning, but I'm an over-the-road trucker, and I'm looking to buy a vehicle from Robert Anderson. Is he home? And the woman says, no, that's my son. He's a night shift worker at the Morrell's meatpacking plant, and he's working right now.
Investigators rush to the parking lot of the meatpacking plant in Sioux Falls, searching for a black Ford Bronco registered to a Robert Leroy Anderson.
All the information coming in to investigators at this point is starting to sort of come together. Things are heating up a little bit, so they want to act on the information as quickly as possible. Robert Leroy Anderson, whose parents live a couple of miles from Piper's place, owns a Ford Bronco. And he works at the meat plant. So things are starting to come together here.
And they find the Bronco that matches Robert Leroy Anderson's license plate number. They're very upset that it's not black. So now they wait. They stake out the Morrell's parking lot, and they wait until Robert Leroy Anderson gets off work.
Robert Leroy Anderson, owner of a blue Ford Bronco, drives home and goes to bed. He's a married man and a father of four. Police don't believe this is the man who kidnapped Piper Striley.
Someone's a suspect, they have to at least eliminate that person as a suspect, and they think this is going to be real quick.
In the interest of conducting a thorough investigation, investigators would want to interview anybody that potentially was involved or may have seen something or knows something about the event. So that interview, if it's not necessarily the suspect, would be considered an elimination interview just to gather all the possible information.
So the investigator, who is very seasoned, goes to Robert Leroy Anderson's house and says, I'd like to ask you some questions. Robert Leroy Anderson says, okay. And right away, the investigator sees red flags. When somebody comes to your house and says, I want to question you at the police station, you say, why? What happened? Am I a suspect? What's going on? And he was just so calm about it.
Robert Leroy Anderson drives his blue Ford Bronco to the police station for an interview.
They have a conversation with him. And he tells them that he was the same guy that was out at the house Friday morning. He acknowledges he was there. He acknowledges the conversation with Vance and the essential nature of the conversation. And then they say, well, have you been out there since then? Well, no, he said. And then one of the officers says, well, is there any reason someone would tell us that you had been out there? And he says, well, yeah. Come to think of it, I was out there yesterday. And then he goes into an explanation that he did go out there to try to get permission to use the archery range, which Vance was working on out there. And he knocked on the door.
And they said, well, why would we find your fingerprints on the door? And Robert said, oh, well, I guess I did go up and try the door, but nobody was home, so I just turned around and left. So now they have this perpetrator admitting that he was at the Striley residence and left his fingerprints there.
The whole instance is eerily reminiscent of the missing Larissa Dymansky, a Ukrainian immigrant who disappeared from the parking lot of a local meatpacking plant 2 years prior. The same packing plant that Robert Leroy Anderson works at.
As police are investigating, they uncover another missing woman who actually worked at the same place as both Piper and Robert. So there seem to be a lot of interesting similarities between these cases, and they're starting to see a possible connection here.
The American dream was on the verge of coming true for Larissa and Bill Dymansky. Larissa was very pretty, very well-liked, very intelligent. She spoke several languages. And the Demanskys made many friends in the amount of time that they were in the country.
Larissa Demansky and her husband Bill moved to America in 1990 and work at the John Morrell Meatpacking Plant. They have two daughters, and Larissa works the night shift so she can care for them during the day.
And so, Anderson knew Bill Demansky, Anderson knew Larissa Demansky, and they both knew him.
Larissa Demansky vanishes on August 28th, 1994, and is never seen again.
They'd interviewed hundreds of people, but by the time Larissa disappeared, Anderson didn't work on her line anymore. He had changed jobs from working on the line to being a night maintenance man. So he worked a different shift, he worked in a different department, and had been for some time. And so nobody made that immediate connection until he was connected to the Piper Stryley case. And then they started actively working the Demansky case again.
During the 7-hour interrogation, Robert denies any involvement with the disappearance of Larissa Demansky.
He might lead them to where Piper is, so they need to keep him talking. They're afraid that she might be held somewhere, and if they don't find her, she could die. So they keep him talking. They didn't tell him this. They kept talking to him. But behind the scenes, some of them went and got search warrants to search Robert Anderson's body, his Bronco, and his house.
First thing that they do, and this becomes very important, they take Robert Leroy Anderson back for a strip search. And the first thing that they notice is he doesn't wear underwear. That seems a little bit odd. And when he emptied his pockets, they notice there were handcuff keys on his vehicle key ring. That doesn't set very well. Not very many people run around with handcuff keys on their key ring.
Police search the blue vehicle belonging to Robert Leroy Anderson and discover something hidden beneath the floor of the cargo area. It's a board which appears to enable the user to shackle a person to it.
A discovery like this could be potentially compelling evidence. However, there are some major issues that need to be overcome at this point. All the witnesses indicate that the suspect vehicle was a black Bronco, completely black. The problem is this vehicle is blue and white.
They search his Bronco. He's a pack rat. So they're finding all kinds of bags and receipts. They're finding receipts for hand sprayers, for duct tape, for eye rings, and brown jersey gloves, and they find some of those items in the vehicle as well. Receipts for paint, for some tempera paint.
393 Kraft paint that was purchased on Thursday. 16-ounce liquid bottle. And it looked like it's black finger paint is what it is. It's water-based paint that kids use for watercolors and that sort of stuff. So we had the cash register receipt. One of the DC agents took the receipt and went to the store where the purchase had been made and said, if you thinned that out and painted it on a car, would it wash off? And she said, you know, you're the second person this week who's asked me that. And he said, well, you suppose you could pick out the identity of the guy you dealt with? And she said, sure, I'll try. So they took the same photo lineup out there, and she picked out Robert Anderson as the guy who had bought the black paint on the previous Thursday.
August 2nd, 1996. Robert Leroy Anderson is charged with the kidnapping of Piper Stryley.
It's been less than a week since Piper went missing, and she could very well be found alive. The fact that they arrested and charged him doesn't negate the fact that they have to continue with a very thorough investigation to determine where she is.
There were a couple of toolboxes in the vehicle. One had tools in it. The other one had kind of odd stuff in it. A couple of cans of spray paint, tear gas cartridge, a set of X-Acto knives, a skein of red yarn, one of those big nylon tie-downs like you use to tie stuff down in the back of a pickup, and it had a bunch of vegetation in the bottom of the box that was relatively fresh. I mean, it hadn't dried out like the leaves falling off the trees in the fall. It was more like the leaves had been pulled off and ended up in the bottom of the box and were 2-3 days old.
Investigators sent the vegetation to a local expert.
The botanist could look at the plants, for example, that were found and determine where specifically that plant would be known to grow. That could be vital in solving this investigation.
This stuff only grows in a riparian area, that is to say, along a waterway. And he said it only grows where there's tree cover, where you're close to water, and where the cattle have not grazed. He said, you gotta go over by the Big Sioux River, which runs through Sioux Falls, at least 30 miles away from Astralis. And you have to look there because that's the only place you're gonna find it.
They got a whole bunch of police volunteers and they came out there and they started combing that area. The botanist was right on the money. They found half of Piper's nightshirt cut off there. They found a wad of duct tape that was rolled up with head hairs on it. They found a battery-operated vibrator and a burnt candle. The roll of duct tape that they found in Robert Lee Anderson's Bronco, they unrolled it, and they unrolled the wadded-up piece of duct tape that they found along the river, and the ripped-off ends matched.
Investigators suspect Robert Lee Roy Anderson has raped and killed Piper Striley. They also suspect him in the disappearance of Larissa Dumansky 2 years earlier, but they don't have enough to press charges. As Anderson's kidnapping case goes to trial, law enforcement uncover a key fact in the case. Robert Lee Roy Anderson did not work alone. Sioux Falls, South Dakota, July 1996. Investigators believe they may be dealing with a serial rapist and murderer.
They're putting two and two together. This guy doesn't wear underwear. Piper is menstruating when he takes her. He has raped her, and her blood is in his blue jeans. Now, the back of the Bronco, they find some very disturbing evidence. They find the homemade bondage board. They find a couple of toolboxes. One of the toolboxes, the investigators named it the torture box. It had ether in it to knock somebody out. It had eye rings. It had bindings.
Sometimes evidence and witnesses can come to the police's attention in very unusual and unexpected ways, and it looks like that's what happens and how Glenn Walker first comes to their attention here.
Glenn Walker is an old friend of Anderson's, a friendship that Anderson exploits.
The way that Glenn Walker first comes to the attention of police is through some answering machine recordings that they uncover. And so these answering machine recordings show Glenn Walker talking about how they went to Piper's because they were looking for a church for his mom. And everyone knows that this sounds strange and doesn't quite seem to make sense in the circumstances.
During Piper's trial, when Robert Leroy Anderson was being tried for kidnapping, somebody came to the investigators with a recording, answering machine tape, and in it, there was something with Glenn Walker trying to say, oh, hey, remember that I told you that we were out by Piper's house because we were trying to find a church for Robert's mom? It sounded like Glenn Walker was trying to make an excuse for Robert Leroy Anderson. So they knew now there was some kind of connection, but they didn't know what it was.
Glenn Walker and Anderson were childhood friends. And Walker also worked at Morrell's. So Morrell's was a focal point for a lot of the folks involved.
But Glenn Walker was a follower. Robert Leroy Anderson was a dominant personality, and he eventually talked his friend Glenn Walker into becoming involved.
So they subpoenaed Glenn Walker to come to court every day. They had no intention of putting him on the stand because they didn't know what to ask him, but they wanted to make him nervous, and it worked. Because then he said to them, well, I do have some information about Robert Leroy Anderson, but I want immunity for it. And they said, well, before we can say we'll give you immunity, we need to know, you know, what you you know, basically what you know. And he said, well, I know where Larissa Domanski's body is buried.
May 20th, 1997, 2 weeks after Robert Leroy Anderson's trial for the kidnapping of Piper Striley, Glenn Walker leads police to a bushy area near Lake Vermilion, where he says Larissa Domanski is buried.
They did exhume, and they did not find very much of Larissa's remains. They found a few bones, a few scraps of a blue jean.
And within that evidence they obtained, they were able to identify Larissa by DNA.
Forensic scientists find a total of 57 pieces of evidence related to Larissa, which include a tooth, a rib, the bones from the left and right wrists, several fingers, a right foot and ankle, jaw bones and fingernails. They also find working gloves, shell casings and bullets, Larissa's shoes, a part of her belt, jewelry and pieces of her clothing. It doesn't appear that the shallow grave has been disturbed, and they don't know why only part of her skeleton is buried here. Without enough hard evidence directly showing guilt for murder, Robert Leroy Anderson is given a life sentence for kidnapping Piper Striley. But Anderson's cellmate, Jeremy Bruner, comes to law enforcement with what he says is enough to convict Anderson of Striley's killing.
There's a statute in South Dakota that says that nobody can be convicted of a homicide unless the death of the victim is proved, and that it was done by the perpetrator is proved beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a statutory obligation that you have to prove. We weren't sure we could prove it the first time around. But the second time around, when we had Bruner's testimony, we were much more comfortable.
Jeremy Bruner is very smart, very cunning. He knows how the prison system works. Robert Leroy Anderson did not.
When Bruner got to the pen, he paid somebody two cans of chewing tobacco to make up a rap sheet for him, which suggested that he was a big-time gangbanger and cocaine dealer and had beat a federal murder rap in Oklahoma. Well, that would give him status.
And Robert Leroy Anderson wants to know, how did you beat a first-degree murder charge out of Oklahoma? And Bruner said it really was pretty easy. I found a guy that had no alibi. I had items from the crime. We planted it in the guy's house. We tipped off the authorities. They found that evidence. This guy didn't have any alibi, and a good attorney got me an acquittal. Robert Leroy Anderson said, wow, do you think you could do that for me? Now Jeremy Bruner, a light bulb goes off, and he goes, I might be able to get something out of this guy.
A jailhouse informant is someone who the accused is in custody with, who they've decided for whatever reason to confess their crimes to. In order for the prosecutor to decide to use a jailhouse informant as their main witness, they're going to have to be really confident that that person's going to come off as a credible witness.
And one of the prison officials said, look, Bruner, the state's attorney general isn't just going to come down here because you said you've got some information. You need to give us something a little more. So Bruner is shrewd. He plays an ace right off the bat. Bruner tells the prison authorities, look, you guys think that Robert Leroy Anderson took that little Nathan's play tent the day he abducted Piper to wrap her body in, but that's not the case.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota is gripped by the possibility of a serial killer and sexual sadist in their midst. Convicted only of kidnapping Piper Striley, prosecutors have all their hopes riding on convicted felon Jeremy Bruner to get Robert Leroy Anderson on rape and murder convictions for both Piper Striley and Larissa Domanski.
They have a saying in inmates' testimonies worth a bucket of warm spit, because they might just be saying it to get themselves out of trouble.
So Bruner is shrewd. He plays an ace right off the bat. Bruner tells the prison authorities, look, you guys think that Robert Lee Roy Anderson took that little Nathan's play tent the day he abducted Piper to wrap her body in, but that's not the case.
He said he took the tent because he shot a hole in it with a 9mm pistol while he was wrestling with Mrs. Striley to get her out of that trailer house. And he said the bullet went down through the floor of the trailer and the shag carpet covered up the bullet hole, and you guys missed a bullet hole in that trailer. Why don't you go look for that bullet hole and then come back and talk to me? And so we did exactly that. We sent somebody out there. Vance rolled back the carpet and there was a bullet hole there just where Bruner said it would be.
So the authorities do go out to the Striley residence. They pull the carpet back. There is indeed a bullet hole in there. They insert a metal rod that gives them the angle of the travel of the bullet. They crawl underneath the Striley trailer house. They dig with their bare hands and they get the 9mm slug that went through the floorboard.
With the information he gives authorities, Jeremy Bruner gains credibility. Bruner tells law enforcement where to find a treasure trove of damning evidence against Robert Lee Roy Anderson, based on what Anderson himself admitted to Bruner in prison.
Robert Lee Roy Anderson goes, look, in my mom's house, downstairs in the basement, up in the rafters by my childhood bedroom, I stashed the 9mm pistol, handcuffs, and I've also stashed jewelry that I took for souvenirs off both those women. I'll draw you a map, and you can go in there when my mom's not home.
We find a 9mm pistol. We find Piper Striley's engagement ring and wedding ring. We find a hollow heart-shaped locket, which Bill Damansky had given his wife as a gift, which she wore regularly and she was wearing the night she disappeared. We find the clip for the pistol, and we find a pair of handcuffs.
With Bruner's testimony, prosecutors can tell the court what they believe Robert Lee Roy Anderson did to Piper Striley on July 29th, 1996. After stalking Piper Striley for some time, Robert admits to an abduction attempt on Friday, July 26th, but is surprised to see Vance is still home because of Bible camp. He leaves his address, but comes back the following week.
Robert Leroy Anderson was obsessed on taking Piper Striley. He was not going to be denied this woman that he wanted to rape and abduct. So the next Monday, on July 29th, he goes back to the Striley residence, but now he's brought the 9mm handgun with him. He needs more control. And his plan was, if Vance Striley was there that morning, he was going to shoot and kill Vance and take Piper anyway. That Monday morning, Robert Lee Anderson knocks on the door. Little Shana, who's almost 4 years old, answers the door. Robert pushes his way in, and he meets Piper coming down the hallway. He yells at her to get on the floor. Piper refuses. He shoves Piper back down the hallway and into one of the children's bedrooms. The gun goes off. The gun shoots a hole through one of those little vinyl play tents that kids can set up in their bedroom. He finally gets Piper wrestled to the ground on her stomach. Piper is screaming for Shana to grab her little brother and go run and hide. And he handcuffs her, hands and ankles. Robert Leroy Anderson then picks up Piper, throws her over his shoulder, and starts carrying her out to his SUV. When they get out to the parking lot and he tries to put Piper in the vehicle, Piper is still struggling and fighting. Robert Leroy Anderson shoots the 9mm handgun off near her to frighten her some more. the semi-automatic 9mm spits a spent shell casing into the Strily driveway. But the sound of the pistol unnerves Robert Lee Randerson. He needs to get out of there. He looked for the spent shell casing, but he couldn't find it. So he puts Piper in the vehicle and hops in and takes her away.
Robert Leroy Anderson comes back to the scene of the kidnapping twice.
Robert Leroy Anderson took Piper, but then he remembered that he had left that piece of paper at the house. So they go back and he makes Piper show him where that piece of paper is. He takes that piece of paper, they leave. They come back another time. He was also afraid that he'd left a shell casing as well. So he came back twice. That's how bold he was.
On the ride, he's taking her to a secluded area that he has along the Big Sioux River. Very vegetated, very tall trees. She's shackled to the bondage board. Robert Lee Randerson proceeds to cut her nightshirt off and rapes her repeatedly and sexually tortures her.
Piper's body was not recovered. Robert Anderson said that he brought her to a log jam and put her in there so that she would get caught in the logs. A lot of people don't believe that. First of all, he had been successful hiding Larissa's body, and he treated it as his property. It was something he went back and visited to recreate the crime. That's very common with people who are sexual sadists who take trophies like that, who take a necklace or a ring. It's more likely that he put her body somewhere where he could go back and visit it. And he's hoping that when he tells Jeremy Bruner this information, that he's going to get out of prison, he's going to be able to go back and see Piper's body. So it's more likely that he buried her somewhere.
Thanks to the testimony of Jeremy Bruner, the court finds Anderson guilty of the rape and murder of Piper and the kidnapping and murder of Larissa 2 years earlier.
The other thing is, we identified half a dozen other women that he had followed around and stalked and at least considered kidnapping. And we were able to identify some of these women, and so we got some of that evidence in as well.
Robert Leroy Anderson is sentenced to death. He exhausts all appeals, but prior to receiving a lethal injection, he hangs himself in his cell. While evidence shows that Piper Strily's body was dumped along the river, the spring of 1997 saw what many call the flood of the century. An event that placed nearly half of South Dakota underwater and makes finding her body next to impossible. Despite this, investigators still search for her remains to this very day.